Okay, I want to go ahead and start this joint meeting between the Board of Supervisors and School Board. And before we begin, I would like us all to stand and give a moment of silence for the tragedy in Connecticut. Thank you. I want to welcome the members of the Board of Supervisors over to our boardroom. Thank you for making time to come here today, tonight, especially during this season, a very busy season for everyone, I'm sure. And it looks like we have several here from both boards. I do know Ms. Turgeon indicated she could not come because of a prior commitment. She's actually out of town, so she regrets that she's not here. Before we get started, I just wanted to say one of the reasons why I think the school board wanted to have this meeting is thought it would be good to have a face-to-face conversation before we go into our budget process, because as you may know, our process just began about 2 weeks ago with the superintendent's recommendation or his request to the school board, and the school board has had one working session and just started working at it, and pleased to see our Supervisor Delgadio came briefly to our first working meeting. We have meetings scheduled throughout January and hope to have our budget request to you all or have it completed by the end of January. So that's kind of our time frame. So we've just begun looking at the request from the superintendent as well. With that, we do know Mr. Hemstreet was kind enough to send a memo, and I want to give an opportunity to Mr. Hemstreet to summarize that and maybe have some Q&A on that memo.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, may I ask you a question?
Yes.
It appears that not everyone here, not everyone present, has a copy of the memo. Do we have any extra copies?
They were emailed around. Oh, great. Thank you.
They're in Dropbox also.
We'll make those available.
Mr. Chairman, while the memos go around, I just want to take this time to thank you for hosting us this evening. And also, I think the only board member will not be appearing with us this evening is Supervisor Volpe. So, thank you.
You won't want them. We're having technical difficulties with them, so that's why I'm using a different kind one.
Change the bed.
Oh, yeah. We'll rent them to you.
We do have plenty of copies of the agenda for the public back here on this table, if anyone needs one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of both boards. Our understanding was that this came out of a motion from the Joint Committee to have a discussion with both boards regarding the budget and the schedule and the budget process itself. And so what we tried to do was to prepare a background memo which talks about what's remaining in the process, highlighting the county side primarily because of the fact that the Board of Supervisors provides the primary or is the primary source of funding for the Loudoun County Public Schools. So what we've done here is gone through the calendar with a focus on specific dates or specific milestones, the largest of which is the advertised tax rate. That sets the upward end, if you will, of available revenue to fund the total county budget, which includes everything the county does, as well as the public schools. We start with the last date, and then we kind of back into the rest of the dates. The final date, of course, is the payment of taxes, which is June 5th. which means bills have to go out by May 5th, which means the board needs to adopt, you know, right around the April 3rd or so is what we've projected. When you back up from that, there are, you know, we usually allow 4 weeks or so of Board of Supervisors work sessions, which is primarily March. Putting the budget hearings in, you know, I think February 27th, 28th, March 2nd. There is a required separation between the advertised date and the public hearing dates. That's a minimum of a week. We try to make it 2 weeks just to provide enough time for people to see the ad, to see the notice, and then be able to attend the public hearings to give their input to the board, which then puts my delivery of the budget 2 weeks before the public hearing, which in this case is February the 6th. As has been the practice for I guess a few years now, which actually predates me, the board has gone through a process of what we call fiscal guidance, which provides myself as well as Dr. Hattrick an idea of where the board is in terms of its total, its overall budget discussion, as well as what it's looking at or projecting to consider in terms of overall tax revenue. The next two steps on that is a discussion with the Finance, Government Services, and Operations Committee of fiscal guidance on January 8th. And then a final discussion with the Board of Supervisors on January 16th. By that time, we usually have as much information as we're going to get, you know, absent the final school board budget. But by that time, we have the governor's budget. We've had time to analyze that. We have an idea of where our assessment rolls are going to come in as of January 1st. And we have the latest revenue projections from both county staff as well as from school staff. So we go with that, and then we advertise the rate that first week in February. One of the things we were asked to do was if there was a desire to change the rate after it's been advertised, what would that process look like? And so the memo goes into a alternate schedule should that occur. So that's a very quick summary of what's in the memorandum. Mr. Chairman.
So I'll go ahead and ask the first question. So if I understand this schedule correctly, the Board of Supervisors would be making setting the tax rate as of January the 16th. Is that correct?
No. The board gives – the way the process works now is the board gives me guidance. I actually advertise the rate based off of the guidance that the board gives me, and I'll set that rate after – the final fiscal guidance,
but before the advertisement before February 1st.
No, the advertisement will actually be February 8th.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Submit budget advertisement proof. I guess that. Okay.
Well, it's published. The first published ad is February the 8th.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and that. Okay. Right. Then that is the maximum rate.
That is correct.
Okay.
Unless we change it later on, which we don't want to do.
Well, it looks like that's – well, that's the subject of the rest of the memo. It doesn't look like you have a lot of time to be able to do that.
If I may.
Yes, Mr.
When do you all anticipate to have your budget done and over to the county administrator?
We can have it by the end of January. I mean, we currently have a schedule that would have it the third week in January. We'll have concluded. I'd like to give us an extra week just in case. So I'd say by the end of January, we could have ours adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Sorry, other questions? Vice Chairman Clark.
Thank you. And it's really nice to have everybody sitting around the table like this. I think this is a first for all of us. So it's great. Just for a point of reference, if you, Mr. Hemstreet, could refer to last year what we advertised at, what you advertised at, and that was prior to us going into our budget work sessions, correct? And then we had some, 12 or 13 work sessions? I think it was 12 or 13 work sessions, which is that budget work session March TBD. So that's not just one session. I think that would be helpful.
I'm sorry.
What you advertised at last year and then what we ended.
We advertised at $1.29 last year, and the final rate was $1.23.5. The primary, now there are a couple things happened last year. Last year, the school board adopted their budget after I had to propose. So the budget was based off of the superintendent's proposed budget. And so if you recall, what happened was by the time the Board of Supervisors started its deliberations, the school board had finalized at least their initial budget. And so right off the bat, you're at $1.27 or somewhere in there based off of the school board's budget. So obviously, if the school board can provide a budget, you know, by that week of the 22nd or so, then it'll be in time to make it into the printed budget, and so which would then be factored into the final tax rate or the advertised tax rate. Sorry.
Mr. Morse.
Can you remind us again what 1 cent on the tax rate, what the impact is fiscally for the county?
Well, we use two numbers. a new penny, I want to say, is about $8.7 million, because there's three tax collections in a new penny, because you pick up the second collection of the current year and then the two collections in the budget year. A recurring penny is about 6 cents, is right under 6 cents. 6 million, sorry. A recurring penny is 6 million. Thank you.
Mr. Keisters.
Thanks. So the recurring penny versus a new penny. When you're setting the budget for the county, you're using the new penny rate, I'm assuming. That's what you're going to be based the advertising on, and that's what you're going to be based on what you're budgeting for the next fiscal year.
For yes and no. For recurring expenditures, well, to make it simple, yes.
Because I'm trying to figure out why it matters, the difference between a current penny versus a recurring penny.
When you talk about the base budget, before you get into new pennies, okay, if you talk about the equalized rate, you're using a recurring penny at $6 million per pen, okay? Because you've got a constant dollar, because your collections are constant at that case, in that situation. When you talk about a new penny, which goes in either direction, because if you drop the tax rate, you're actually going in reverse, so you're subtracting $3 million from the $6 million because you're losing money in the current year, and so that's why it's an additional amount for a new penny, because you're actually a new penny is going over three tax collections. The first collection affects the current year, so in this case, if you had an additional penny, the reason why you have three is you're actually collecting a portion in the current fiscal year and then the two collections in the next year. Correct. I was trying to make it simple, which is yes, we use the new penny.
The new penny, up or down, has an impact on the current year fund balance. But because historically that rate has moved around, it has been the practice of the Board of Supervisors to budget that negative or positive impact as part of the budget process.
Okay, so let me ask you this then. When are the assessments finished so that you know how much a penny is actually going to yield?
Well, they're supposed to be as of January 1st, 2013, and then we estimate January 1st, 2014, because we will collect real property tax for the fiscal year from both of those numbers. We'll probably have the land book by the second week in January. And then from that point, we'll make our assumptions as to what 14 looks like.
Thank you. So my question relates to the fiscal fiscal guidance, clearly that's on the recurring penny amount, right? That's where you end up coming up with $17 million deduction from the 3 cents taken on the school side. Okay. My question is on timing. If the school board gets its budget to the Board of Supervisors at the end of January, its budget request by the end of January, and the Board of Supervisors sets a tax rate prior to actually reviewing and dialoguing about our request, how does the Board of Supervisors see the need and the impact on the schools and hear from the public about that impact?
I was trying to listen back what Mr. Hemstreet said, and I thought he said if the schools get their budget to him on time, your budget is factored in to his advertised rate. Is that correct? So that is the key. And then from that point, then the board will make a determination through its process. If the school board is unable to get its budget to the county administrator, then it's somewhat left open to his determination working with the Board of Supervisors of what that advertised tax rate would be.
And then, Mr. Hemstreet, what is that drop-dead date? Is it the published date? Because that would run difficult for us.
It's really what is included in my proposed budget to the board, which will be presented on February 6th. In order to meet a February 8th published ad date, the proof has to be to the newspaper by February 1st. So really that week January 22nd is what we would be targeting.
Okay.
Finance staff I'll say we might be able to go a little bit in the next week. The finance staff hits me every time I say that. He's doing it right now, but so it's really that week of the 22nd in January.
If you go after that week, the problem is we can't guarantee we can get it in. I mean, we'll finish the budget document that week and send it to the printer. We won't have your numbers in the printed document that most people will get unless you give us those numbers that week. I mean, we can do addendums and we can, we can make that. Everyone here will get the right number, but I can't guarantee we can fully carry it everywhere.
Mr. Hemstreet, if I may propose, the 1st and 2nd of February fall on Friday and a Saturday. The week of the 22nd, the last day of that week, is 25th on Friday. Can we have a guaranteed date by close of business the 25th? Okay.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. Other questions? Ms. Rose.
Yes, I see that you only publish in the Leesburg Today, but I don't know about others in the Algonquian District, but I don't receive that at all, and I don't know of any places that it is locally available for me to pick up ever. So this would be something that in my district people would have to only access online. So is there an opportunity to publish in the Times, Mirror, or other papers so that there's, because that is actually delivered door-to-door in my neighborhood?
We can do additional advertising. We have legal advertising requirements under code. The current vendor for us for that is Leesburg Today. We can and have in past years, advertised in more papers. It costs more money, but we can do that. If that's what everyone's desire would be. But no matter what, our paper of record for advertising purposes by contract is the Leesburg Today. And my history of when we've done this in the past is that the same kind of dates apply to, say, the Thursday, version of the Washington Post, which I know we used in some years past as well. Almost all of those papers for legal ads, they really want it several days in advance.
We need to do a resolution, get them to actually send the paper east of 28. I keep telling them year after year.
Any other questions? Mr. Fox.
Obviously, we've received the fiscal guidance for the. Okay.
Can you hear me now?
We've obviously received the fiscal guidance for the 2014 LCPS budget, and I was just curious about sort of the decision-making process that led to this result. I'm particularly interested in where the figure came from, and the idea of cutting this, having that cut rest solely on the schools with no associated cut to the county. I don't know who to ask this question to, but I'm interested in the decision-making process that led to this result, because it seems a little bizarre to me.
Supervisor Bona.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and take that on. And first of all, you can put that squarely on my back, so I'll just say that right up front. The Finance Committee came up with multiple scenarios on how we might give this guidance. Scenario number one was across the board at the equalized tax rate. Scenario number two, which was even more devastating, was hold to FY13 in terms of absolute dollars, okay, which would take you below the equalized tax rate and the deficit. I forget the exact number, but it was around $65 million. And then scenario number three was that we looked at a scenario that offset from the equalized tax rate. And after a bunch of discussion, some of what resulted from that was we looked at what reforms we felt the county had made. We looked at where pay increases had happened between the schools and the county. We looked at the benefits between the schools and the county. We looked at the VRS reform hitting in 1 year versus 6 years. We looked at the significant OPEB reform. It took $4 million out of the county budget in FY13. For the first time fully funding the full OPEB liability for the county in FY13, pulling out about $4 million annually from the county side of the budget, moving forward for the next 25 years or so until we literally do away with that program and replace it with health retirement savings accounts. And so we tried to figure out what is that equivalent on the school side, because the schools are roughly 4 to 5 times the number of employees that the county were. And that number was a lot more than 3 cents. And 3 cents was, I will say, was kind of arbitrary. It was just kind of thrown out as an example. But that example kind of took hold and it became what went into our packets. But if you look at those reforms we made and you multiply them for the similar effect on the school side based upon the relevant number of, or relative number of employees, the difference was much greater than 3 cents. So we actually backed down from that and took it down to the 3 cents. So it wasn't an arbitrary shot. It was something looking at, let's compare what has happened over the past years between the workforces on both sides, because the bulk of our costs and your costs are in FTEs, and I think we would all admit that that's a big part of our costs. And when you look at the multiplier on our direct salaries in government, be it the county or the schools, it typically is quite a bit higher than what we find in industry. And so on the county side, we try to get it more back in line with industry. And we're hoping, and I'll say this candidly, you can probably find 2 cents of it or 2.5 cents of it just making the same OPEB reforms that the county has already put in effect, effective 1 July. So there was some rhyme and reason. And Kevin and I, you and I have had this discussion, and it's not, we're not saying you have to do that, but it's a suggestion on where you can probably get most of this right up front. So long answer.
One of the things, and I agree with you, that the vast majority of our budget is in in personnel. And you know, you mentioned the multiplier. One thing that we have struggled with and continue to pay very close attention to is surrounding jurisdictions, which we see in effect as competition for qualified teachers. And so when we talk about things like salary increases or the level of benefits that we provide, the premium offset, the subsidy that we provide, we're looking very carefully, and I believe we need to continue to look very carefully at surrounding jurisdictions. Because certainly the last thing that we want is for Loudoun not to be competitive for high quality teachers as compared to Fairfax or even across the border to places like Montgomery County. I'm not sure that there is a similar there possibly is to some extent, but I'm not sure there's a similar dynamic that you're working with on the county side, because when you're talking about how many teachers do we have, Dr. Hattrick?
About 5,000, I think. Teachers.
About 5,000 teachers. You know, with all roughly the same you know job description. It creates a slightly different dynamic than I think what you deal with on the county side, because a teacher here is roughly the same as a teacher in Montgomery County or a teacher in Fairfax or a teacher in Prince William, and so there is this other dynamic that we deal with, and I was just wondering if that's something that you take into account. When you're sort of thinking in your head, you know, the cost per employee is a bit too high for LCPS. Are you taking into account the competitive aspect of recruiting teachers?
Thank you. I'll address this, and I'll throw out the caveat that. When I address this, I address it as somebody who voted against the fiscal guidance because I didn't agree with the 3% on the school side. I don't think it's realistic. I don't think we're going to get there. But I also think the direction that the Board of Supervisors is trying to go is the right one in terms of forcing the conversation. And in terms of your jurisdictional comparison, I do think that that's something that's quite relevant. There's two different buckets here. There's pension benefits, post-employment, and there's health care costs. And last year, during the budget process, you all might remember it, I dipped into the health care cost side a little bit. And I asked the county administration to prepare a comparison of health care costs for LCPS versus surrounding jurisdiction. And the results were pretty stunning. LCPS is way above market in some criteria, in some areas, particularly when it relates to employees who are not full-time employees. And I wouldn't suggest that LCPS should eliminate benefits for those employees, but what we discovered is most surrounding jurisdictions do, in fact, have a tiered system. An employee who, for instance, in Prince William County, who works between 17 and a half and 29 hours a week, has an employer contribution for health care of $344.78. In Loudoun County, as soon as you hit 17.5, at least using last year's health plan, it was $62.50. Fairfax County, $225.12, Arlington, $389.14, Alexandria, $403.04. I think that's the tip of the iceberg when you start making those comparisons. So when you look at those two things, there is a lot of examination that I would hope the school board would do. The other thing that you should consider, when we looked at our health care costs, we saw not even a 1% increase in health care costs. And yet we made the decision to increase our employer contribution on the health care side by 8.8%. LCPS for 2013 is seeing a 16.2% increase in health care costs. So in my mind, not only should you match the 8.8%, which is what the standard practice has been between the county and LCPS, but you should also address the 16.2% increase that's on your side and your system. Your system is a younger system than ours. Your health care costs in general are less expensive because of your employees, but you don't have HSA, HRA, the type of offerings that we have which help us reduce our costs. So I would throw all that out there for areas that I would hope the school board would look at very seriously in this budget, and I think you'll find most of the money that the board is suggesting needs to be adjusted would come in that area as opposed to classroom, and that's what we'd like to see.
Mr. Fox.
You and I have apparently been doing the same homework over the past 6 months. This is an area I've also been looking at, and I have noticed that LCPS has a different policy when it comes to employees with lower hours. I have to make sure I don't call them part-time employees, because as we discovered last year during the budget process, that gets confusing because we define everybody who's over 17 and a half hours a week as a full-time employee. I think that was an area that we addressed last year. It is probably an area we will address again this year. And in terms of the actual cost of health benefits, the premium sharing arrangement, and so forth, that's something that the personnel committee has been working on. We'll probably be looking at a proposal to the full board in our next budget meeting. And it saves us about $4 million the first year, because of course we only get a half year savings in that first year, but about $8 million every year after that. So it's a substantial change, which, despite the fact that it saves us $8 million a year, keeps us competitive with other jurisdictions. In my opinion, very competitive with other jurisdictions. And so we have been working on stuff like that, but there's a long way between, $4 million and the $55 million budget shortfall that we're looking at between your guidance and the proposed budget. Certainly, we're going to look for savings anywhere we can find them, as we did last year. Some of the things that we talked about last year are things that I think will be addressed this year. The benefits being one of those. But with the arbitrary, and I'm still going to call it an arbitrary number because it doesn't seem to be based on anything in specific. It's just kind of a number that we, like you said, a number that was used as a for example. But we're going to make the cuts that we can, and I'm just not sure how helpful. I'm not sure how helpful the guidance is. Number one, and number two, I'm not sure it sends the right message when you say, "Well, this year we're going to cut 3 cents out of the tax rate, but it's just going to come out of the schools." It seems to me that if we're serious about cutting, unless you really believe that you've cut absolutely everything that could possibly be cut last year, and so there's nothing left, there's no efficiencies left to be found this year. It seems like those cuts should be spread out a bit more evenly, so that it doesn't appear that you're attacking education.
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Mr. Bellum.
Yeah. First of all, I agree. You have to benchmark against competitive jurisdictions. I think Prince William, Fairfax are good jurisdictions to benchmark against. I would never benchmark against Montgomery County. I've seen it on the state of the education briefings for years. That county was near bankrupt. Maryland is not a right-to-work state, and that pay scale over there is skewed for reasons that don't exist in Virginia. So I would never use that as a starting point, first of all. There have not been raises on the county side for years. There were not raises in the budget on the county side this year. The board got innovative instead, and what we've said is that if the county administrator could deliver an increment of fund balance, in other words, savings, underspending the budget, by X amount, we would fund a bonus pool. And that bonus pool would be equal to what that raise pool would have been had we built in that raise as a percentage. So what have we done? We've incentivized the county administrator to underspend his budget, number one. Number two, we have essentially avoided the compounding effect. This mentality of COLAs doesn't exist in the private sector anymore. I don't know of any companies saying you'll get 3% every year, 2% every year, 4% every year. It just doesn't exist anymore. Companies have moved strictly to performance, and most companies have done it based on bonus pools. And they do that to avoid the compounding effect. These are not guaranteed things any longer. These are the kinds of innovations that you've got to begin to look at. And we implemented that in 13. Now, the jury is out. We don't know where we are at the end of it. And we've asked the county administrator come in the last quarter of FY13 to the finance committee and give us a reading on where we will be on fund balance. And depending on if those savings are there, we as a board will have to follow through on our promise and fund that bonus pool. And then county employees will receive their share of what they would have had they gotten raises. So it was really incentive type of thing that we tried to create there. I don't believe this is arbitrary. And again, if you wanted the real answer, it was worse than 3 cents. But I think we owe it to you as a board to let the school board know where our overall mindset is. This is a fiscally conservative board. We do pay close attention to the tax rate, and I think it would be unfair if we just said, just come in wherever you want. Just come in wherever you want, and then we have a very compact, condensed conversation in a very, very short amount of time about, we're not even close. Whereas at least with his guidance, you've got the mindset of the majority of the board right now to say, it's our intention, if we can, to continue to reduce the burden on our residential population, if we can. We understand you're opening a few more schools. We understand student population goes up every year. The county side of it, we increase our population 10, 15,000 every year in this county. The county side has not added FTEs. They scaled back in 08 when things were bad. We haven't added FTEs. We're still at those 08 levels right now, even though, and we're delivering greater levels of service. Mental health right now is bulging, and we haven't added because we've been trying to hold the line on what our residents can afford. So it's really trying to set an expectation between the boards to say, here's the ballpark we want to be in, so help us get there together, not come in where you want, and then down the road, we're going to have to all kind of duke it out. We don't want that to happen. So really what we're trying to give you is some guidelines. Whether you agree with those guidelines is a different matter, but we're trying to give you the mindset of the board where it is today. It's not intended to be arbitrary. It's not intended to be a stiff arm. It's intended to kind of be, here's the thought process of the Board of Supervisors right now.
Supervisor Williams.
Thank you, Chairman Humberger. And just to address one of those questions that Mr. Fox asked, of course, on the county side, we will be looking for additional efficiencies this year. I'm sure we've got multiple work sessions, and we're going to do our best to lower the tax rate again. I did want to talk about the per pupil expenditure and how last year it went up at a 5.8% increase. Cost per pupil, we realize we have lots of new students coming into the system, but cost per pupil went up 5.8%. And this year, the request is another 5.3%, and I understand that, but it seems a little out of whack with why we're having to increase the per pupil expenditure so drastically year over year. I mean, that's a 11% increase year over year, which is much higher than it should be.
Just to clarify, Supervisor Williams, roughly half of that was an AVERS payment transfer of responsibility from one side to another, from the state to the schools. So nearly half of that is attributed simply to a budgetary change. We also have OPEB responsibility that was carried on our side. It was not there before. It came last year versus previous years. It was always on the Board of Supervisors. Now, should it have been? I don't know, but it changes that equation from year to year. So there, But you know, a point is made. I mean, in terms of the cost per pupil.
Is Loudoun County having a hard time attracting qualified teachers in terms of the question about being competitive with other jurisdictions? No. Okay.
I don't. Yeah. I mean, Ms. Rose, want to answer that question?
I specifically asked about this last year in our budget consideration, and the answer came back. And Ms. Burden, if she's here, she can correct me if I'm wrong. But essentially, we give as many teachers to Fairfax as we get each year from Fairfax. So I don't. Under current numbers, teachers are attracted to go there at about the same rate as they're attracted to come here. So I don't know. In my estimation, I don't think that it's I think it's the intangibles that will draw people to either one, not necessarily in the exact dollars.
Mr. Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two issues. The first was we were discussing the performance pool that's being set up for the county members and how at the end of the year, if there's some existing fund balance, that they would be able to use that. Well, we tried to do that at the LCPS as well, and what ended up happening was that money got scooped up and applied towards the budget. So, you know, sometimes those thoughts of us trying to conserve the resources, we end up getting that and pulling it out and making that part of the next year's budget. The biggest concern I have is that you identified some weaknesses or some areas that we could save some funds. As we look at that, you set your tax rate based on one item, and I think we're setting a dangerous precedent where the Board of Supervisors now starts to focus in on specific issues within the school board budget and targeting them by adapting an overall budget that is specifically targeted for one specific area. I think it's a bad precedent, and it becomes a la carte kind of issue where next year, if you don't like half-day kindergarten, you pull out $6 million and say, well, you get $6 million less, but we'd recommend that you pull out half-day kindergarten. I think that the school board has set forth in good faith an effort as a conservative board as well to identify those areas of cost savings and cost reduction. We did that last year. I expect us to do this year as well. But I would expect to see that relationship of mutual trust and respect to reside and resound through these proceedings. And I think I speak on behalf of a lot of the board members when we felt like that was a personal affrontage to what we're trying to do in the interest of all Loudoun County.
Mr. Reed.
Supervisors.
Yes,
not
Mr. sorry,
School
yes.
Board Reed, okay. R-E-I-D, okay. Well, first of all, if anyone hasn't noticed, the governor is proposing to eliminate cost of compete to the tune of $12.5 million. It was in the paper the other day. So that's going to be another food fight in Richmond, I'm sure. We haven't discussed what will or what may not happen or may happen if Congress and the President don't come up with something with sequestration, because I can tell you right now, I have no desire to do any kind of significant tax increases in this county if we're going to start seeing our residents and every resident in this country having to pay more in taxes come January 1st. In terms of cost per pupil, there was a good memo that Dr. Hattrick sent to the Government Reform Commission where he said that cost per pupil is the industry standard to measure efficiency. So I guess the question I have to ask is, if you're saying that half of this is due to a state budget change, do you have any kind of target efficiency for cost per pupil?
We just started our budget process this year, so I mean, we haven't even looked through it, and we haven't talked about setting a target in terms of cost per pupil, no.
Well, I got an interesting memo from a member of Educate Loudoun, and you're all familiar with that group, because they helped a lot in getting the school board elected, at least many of you. He proposes fiscal impact fees to cover capital construction from new homes and have it based on 75% of tax revenue generated from new construction, technology upgrades. I can send this memo to you, and so on and so forth. One of the things we haven't discussed yet is capital, and one of the things that I'd like to just float out there for my colleagues to consider for the future, especially as new developments come along, is to use the service district concept for school construction. And it wouldn't be the transportation service district that we used
for Dulles Rail, but it's a service district statute that's used in Prince William County effectively to build schools. So I'm just throwing that out for general consumption here. Thank you.
Mr. York. Go ahead, Mr. Reed.
I was just largely going to say dittos to what Mr. Reed said. I think I've been trying to express a concern about the fiscal cliff we're headed towards. Loudoun County will be, our cliff is higher, and I think the rocks are a lot harder for this county, depending on what happens in the next few weeks. But after that is, after that's resolved, I think then we're going to need to get together and try to work out what we're going to do with our budget. But I just want to echo that I agree. The sequestration is a problem. Social Security, our employees have had the benefit of the not paying the Social Security. The employers have been paying that, so that won't impact us. It will impact our employees. It will impact our citizens. Obamacare is impacting a lot of our firms, and they're cutting back on people's hours. Again, that's going to have an impact on our revenue. So a lot of problems are hopefully going to be come to fruition, not fruition, but be resolved here in the next couple of weeks. But I thank Mr. Reed for bringing it up first.
Chairman York.
Just a little food for Fox, Mr. Or food for thought, Mr. Fox. Yeah. Sorry, it's been a long day starting at 8 in the morning. This will be my 18th budget. I have voted sometimes for fully funding. I have been on the side of the winning vote that has cut several million dollars out of the proposed budget. Every year when there is a proposal to cut several million dollars out of the school budget, we hear how devastating it's going to be and it's going to wreck the education in this community. Well, that we have cut several million dollars, when you total it up year after year after year, but we've got an excellent educational system. And I can assure you that I've not known many board members, and I've known many that have ever attacked education in Loudoun County. It is about a concern to try to ensure that we can deliver quality service, but at the same time keep somewhat an affordable community. Why we are not, and I repeat not, because there's a lot of misconception within the Republican Party, we are not the highest taxing county where Prince William is when you do an apples-to-apples comparison, but we are fairly close. And we want to ensure that that we are still attractive to the business community, to be able to locate here, to provide excellent jobs, but selfishly, as a board member, to help support the needs of this community, which primarily cost us in the arena of education. And so I simply hope, and I agree the concern of having excellent teachers. I am just as equally concerned that the county have good staff members as well, because when we have business to do, we have to have a professional staff to handle that business. But we took a step forward because we are very concerned about the future of the affordability of this county and our affordability to be able to ensure people's retirement. Other communities, and we can't ignore it, other communities are going broke because promises have been made that promises can't be kept because we are living longer. And that responsibility is coming to the point that we can no longer afford. And unfortunately, we have to take corrective action to make sure that in the future there is a retirement program to give the folks. So please understand that we're not here to attack education. We're here to make sure that we have a good balanced approach to providing the necessities of our community, from law enforcement, fire and rescue, libraries, most important is education, and do it in a manner that many of us can afford to live here. We are the highest household income community within the United States, but it is skewed because of the deep pockets that some individuals have in a community, but not all. And we have to keep that in mind. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Supervisor Delgadio.
Thanks. Thank you all for being here tonight. And for the two that can't be here, I'm sure we'll fill them in on how the meeting went. I'm in my fourth term, and this is, I guess, my 13th budget with Chairman York. And Tom Reed, I don't know, how many times have you been on this? 14, okay. All right, so I got it. It's my 14th. Okay, so he caught me on that. He's always better on math. He was always asking for more anyway. And to this year, I assume you'll be asking for more again. But it's different this year because we have a different caliber board members on the school board and also on the Board of Supervisors. And I've not seen such a synergy in my four terms. And I appreciate usually there'd be somebody hitting me with a shoe at this point. In past terms, and it would be a colleague on the Board of Supervisors, actually. So this is quite a different tone, and it may come to that. I'm not predicting the future. I'm just talking about tonight. We had pizza. Thank you. Pizza's good. I had the one with the sausage. I had the last one. So my attitude, I represent the smallest district in terms of the compactness and also the highest density and the poorest in Sterling. We had the townhouses, we have the overcrowded housing, we have the zoning problems, we have the lowest income. We have the poorest people in Sterling. So I have to look, I'm a little more sensitive. You know, you've got Christ the Redeemer with the food lines, you've got the coats being handed out, you've got toys being handed out. We have over 4,000 families in the Herndon-Sterling area that benefited from that. The schools, of course, my colleague on the school board is very sensitive and devoted to the people of the district. There are some school districts, some schools, some elementary schools, 60% minority, you know, some perhaps 70%. I'm sorry if I'm not following each elementary school, but it's been that way for a decade. And the economy, the presidential policy, state policy, what we're getting, as Supervisor Reed talked about, from the state or from the you know, the environment of what we're operating in, we take all that into account. And it was a great accomplishment for this Board of Supervisors, to follow through on some of the things they had suggested regarding retirement, regarding health, regarding incentives. These reforms were three very important things that occurred a couple of months back, and the savings will be realized. Again, the caliber of the two boards is very different. Engaging with this before the budget, I mean, you have the deadlines in front of you, but you have this 6 months ago that this current board has been working with that, these savings. As far as the, I guess, Mr. Fox, you really were just kind of, you know, I would say a little upset. I can understand if the county doesn't take cuts. I got that tone in the earlier presentation. But the facts are that the county, as Chairman Bono and Chairman York have talked about, the county has been static for the entire time with no raises. The county has been static with whatever it was, the 2008 levels, and with no raises. So that this is, we're talking tens of millions of dollars on a routine basis in terms of contraction. And unless we see some kind of cooperation, and I'm talking about this is a 4 or 5 year period where we're saying adopt some of the tactics that the county Board of Supervisors has done, and with the wisdom of the Finance Committee, of which I'm a past chairman, but this chairman is presently the most capable chairman in the history of the county. I would like to salute you in deference to my own service, which is only 4 years. And other chairmen that I've seen, like Jim Burton and others, pound for pound, inch for inch, the board, the supervisors has locked arms as a majority, and obviously there are some who don't agree with this policy, and there's a debate to be coming. But the direction is to take chunks of cash. And Mr. Morris, it's not the money sitting there. It's the money will grow. Our balance, the concept is our balance will grow, and then they get the raises. So the incentivizing is show us the improvements on our balance, and then people get raises. So these are three or four areas. If I've missed anything, please jump in on some of the stuff that we've done. But it's a combination of contraction, incentivizing, reducing or putting caps on things, and just predicting what the future is and understanding that there's a burden on people who are not in that Washington Post description, which are everybody has poor people in their district. But in my case, you know, I'm Mr. Fiscal Conservative, but for a reason, because I see that the overcrowding gets worse and other issues, people without jobs are trying to struggle through. Thank you.
Mr. Keisters.
Yes, I wanted to touch a little bit on the issue of benefits. Two items I want to point out for board members just for consideration. Regarding the part-time employees, keep in mind that the issue about having 17 and a half hours as part-time has to do with bus drivers. And the reason why we offer benefits to bus drivers is it's an incentive to bring on the bus drivers. You don't need that same type of incentive necessarily for teachers and administrators since they're full-time employees. They're looking more at their salary and the pensions. Bus drivers, some bus drivers get paid less than $20,000 a year for their routes, but they're primarily doing it because of the health benefits. I personally know two friends of mine who are bus drivers in Loudoun County specifically for that reason. Because individuals, primarily because they're self-employed individuals who can't afford it on their own. So it's not a matter of benefits. It's a means to get bus drivers who can qualify, who can work for the county. The other thing about benefits is we talked about or mentioned OPEB. We haven't finalized the budget, obviously. We're just starting it. And I guess Ralph is gone. He's the one I wanted to hear this. But we actually staff, and this is staff initiative, LCPS staff initiative, has looked at the OPEB costs and the benefits that are being offered, and they have proposed benefits that are in our budget that are going to lower our annual required contribution, which is essentially what we have to budget for this year, from $32 million to $14 million. So we are already looking for savings in those areas. Like I said, we haven't adopted a budget yet, but that's one of the proposals that staff has provided. So we are looking at those things, and Mr. Fox didn't go into details, but he's been doing a yeoman's job looking at the health benefits for the current employees and how to not necessarily cut the benefits, but incentivize employees such that it would be a savings to the school. Through the school system and a lowering of the budget. So I would just put that out there that there are some things that we have either done or are doing to look to be more efficient, cost efficient in providing the services that we are.
Supervisor Letourneau.
Thanks. Well, I certainly understand the point about bus drivers, but the other jurisdictions have bus drivers with similar concerns as well. And that is why they have tiered healthcare systems, which we do not. The employees qualify based on the hours worked, and there is a category in most of these jurisdictions that includes the bus drivers. So that's what I would encourage you to look at when you're looking at market comparisons. I mean, not just teachers, but how do bus drivers handle in Fairfax and Prince William and so on. And the understanding that I have is that they don't pay the same rate as everybody else. So that's one point, which I certainly do take your point. The other issue that I want to make on OPEB is, and I don't know what the discussions have been at your to this point, but the proposed budget changes are not nearly what the county's done. For instance, there's no annual cap limiting employer contributions in the proposed budget changes, which we did put in place, I believe, 5%. I think you have 150% total lifetime, but not the annual. And it only applies to current retirees or those retired before January 1st, 2014. It does not apply to those employees in those categories, whereas our changes apply to all of our employees, including those who are already retired. And, I mean, I'm not going to lie, it's not like county employees were jumping up and down with glee over that. But at the same time, we needed to make sure that they actually had something in 10 years and 15 years, and we were able to move away from what essentially is now a defined benefit to a defined contribution. And that's, I think, when we talk about OPEB reform on this side, I think that's really what we're talking about. A couple other points I want to make. In addition to all that other stuff about how the county employees are paid, we have a policy in place, which I was not aware of until probably 6 months into my term, and it only came up because I was having a late-night chat with the county administrator on a few other things, that we actually take a jurisdictional comparison of surrounding jurisdictions, and we pay 95% of market for county employees compared to all of our competitors, which I'm not sure is all that wise, frankly, but that we already have built in a 5% reduction versus Fairfax and so on. And, you know, I agree that it isn't quite the comparison case by case, but we're competing with the private sector. I mean, when we've lost employees, a lot of times we lose them. They do a good job for the county for a little while, and then they go and they work for a capital construction firm. For instance, as we all know, we just lost our director of capital construction, who's going to be making a lot more money. I mean, it's not like we're not competing in the workforce. In order to keep employees, it's hard these days, particularly when you live in a county that has 3.8% unemployment, as ours does, according to the statistics that we just got from DED today. I wanted to touch on the capital costs, and that's another thing that you have to factor in when you're making some of these, you know, jurisdictional comparisons. We are absorbing much greater capital school construction costs than most jurisdictions in our area because we're having growth. And, I mean, I will fight for that money. I will fight for those schools, just like I fought for the school budget last year on the Board of Supervisors, as many of you know. You know, as my colleagues can attest, was a bit of a pest about it because I wanted to, you know, get it up from where we started with, and we did ultimately do that. And I'll continue to fight for what I think is fair. But, I mean, we are taking a lot of costs there right now. And I understand, you know, my friend and colleague, Supervisor Reed, suggested a service district. The problem with the service district is you're penalizing where the growth is. You're penalizing newer residents. You know, it's easy, frankly, for a place like, just to pick on him, for Leesburg to absorb that because we're not going to have as many new schools built. But down in my neck of the woods, as Jeff can attest, you know, we shouldn't be deciding, you know, you have to pay extra to have a new school. I mean, that's essentially what will happen in that type of scenario. So I don't recommend going down that path because it's a pretty dangerous one. But just a few further comments. I think we appreciate the job that you have to do. We appreciate the fact that you guys just came out of a school attendance boundary process, which I think all of you conducted yourselves with a great deal of integrity. I think nobody here was too disappointed we didn't have to go through that, although we did get some emails about it, and I was more than happy to forward those to Jeff. But, you know, I hope that we can continue to work together. You all know, and I can talk about it offline, that there's a particular school site issue in my district that I think we still need to work a little bit further on. And then maybe there's some misunderstandings about what money is available and not. But I think for the most part, we've had a pretty good relationship. I know Jeff and I have, and hopefully we can continue that as we get through this budget process. And we do have a lot of respect for what you all have to do.
Thank you. Any other questions? Vice Chairman Clark?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to touch on not so much an individual question, but the process that we've just engaged in with the dialogue and the questions. In the presentation, thank you, Mr. Hemstreet, Mr. Mays. I think that what has just occurred here with the attendance, with the participation, with the discussion is representative of effective communications and something that we should be engaging in every year prior to an item being before the Finance Services Government Operations Committee, prior to that item coming to the board as a whole. Having said that, you know, I'd be interested in hearing any feedback on whether or head nods on whether you think that would be helpful for the process moving forward for the next 3 years. Do you feel that would be helpful? Mr. Fox?
Mr. Fox.
Yeah, I think anything that we can do to further facilitate communications between the two boards is a good step. I know that I personally campaigned on improved communication between the two boards. I believe I saw that in some other board members' campaign literature as well. So, to any mechanism that we can use that increases, opens up those lines of communication, clears up misunderstandings. I just like to say I thank Mr. Letourneau and Mr. Bona for providing some of the insight into the decision-making process. That does help a little bit. It helps me understand where you guys are coming from. I think that's a good thing to have, and I see no reason why not to sort of institutionalize this type of thing every year, where we just know we're going to get together and talk about the budget before we get into the budget. I'm in favor of it.
Say, particularly for items that you both boards learned about through the previous budget process, to then bring those in and say, hey, we're really hoping that your request will have modifications of these kind, this nature. I think that's very helpful for us, too, on the school side going into ours. Yes, the authority for how to spend the money on the school side does reside with the school board, but we all are a team. We all serve the same county. We serve the same constituents, and we have their interests at heart. And so trying to figure out how to balance limited resources, which there always will be, with more need than we have resources is a task of both boards. Any other comments, Mr. Higgins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do think a meeting like this is a great opportunity to communicate. It's a heck of a lot better than missives by email or by hard mail, so that people can talk and look each other in the eye and know where they're coming from. I'm going to raise an issue that I raised last year and throw it out for consideration. I didn't have the opportunity to share it in a board meeting like this. But one of the other things that I do is I sit on a health care plan as a trustee that insures 15,000 employees and 30,000 plus dependents. And we adopted a policy 2 years ago where we required spouses of employees to take benefits if they were offered by their employer. And in that process of doing that, there was hardship exemptions and other things that we set up to mitigate undue burdens on the employees. But we were able to save on our health care. Nobody's benefits were decreased whatever, and we were able to save 10%. So that's a lot of money. This plan has not had an increase, did not have an increase for 2 years, partially because of that change. So, you know, I would encourage, we've talked about on the county side with the changes that we made in OPEB, that was sort of put on the shelf because of those changes, but it is a way that you can save some money without directly affecting people's benefits, and it works, I'm telling you.
Mr. Fox.
Yeah, this is actually another issue that we did address in committee, and one question that we asked was, is there a way that we could incentivize folks moving from LCPS's plan to another plan that they had available, such as a spouse's plan? And currently, actually, the LEA is looking into via a survey to find out how amenable would folks be to this type of an idea. How much money would it take to get them to move to another plan? When we're spending, in some cases, well over $1,000, $1,500 in some cases on benefits. If we could, provide some sort of an incentive, a monetary incentive, for them to move off of our plan onto a spouse's plan, the potential savings are enormous. And so the LEA is currently looking into that type of an approach. It comes across as a little less draconian than just saying if you've got another plan, your spouse has to get off our plan and onto the other plan, but still has the possibility for huge savings if we can make it work.
Just to address that, you can write your procedures any way you want to, okay? One of the problems is that many employers do pay bounties to employees if they don't take their plan and go get on somebody else's plan because they pay $300 and it costs them $1,200 a month. So, you know, maybe that makes some sense for that employer. The point I'm making, you don't exclude dependents. You don't make people take health care that really isn't there. It's health care that's offered that you have to pay for. It has to be a legitimate plan. It has to be offered by the employer. And, there's hardship cases. I can give you, which I've done before, I'll furnish it again, what we've done. And I can also, I've talked to our consultants and actuaries, and they would be glad to talk through this with anybody that's interested in talking to them.
Any other comments? Well, I thank you all for coming. I think members of the school board, thank you for spending time. I think it is good for us to get together face-to-face, and we'll be doing it again very soon in February. But we will plan on getting our budget together for the administrator by the time, the 25th of January. So we have a lot of work to do, school board, so I hope you'll be reviewing your documents over Christmas and winter break and be ready to hit the ground running in January. Thank you all for coming, and happy holidays to each and every one of you.
Take some pizza home.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to ask you a question about format, because when we have the budget session, you folks sit down there, and we're sitting up at the dais. Would some arrangement
I'll talk with Chairman York to talk about a framework for budget discussions. Great.